Trans-Caspian pipeline is the topic we are going to discuss today. It has been on the agenda for some time now. If it is implemented, will carry Turkmen gas to Europe. But because of numerous reasons, the implementation of the project never kicked off. Now EU's top energy envoy, Maroš Šefčovič, after his recent visit to Turkmenistan in early May, said that Brussels expects the Turkmen gas by 2019. We understand EU's desperate efforts to find alternative source of energy in markets beyond Russia. We also understand Turkmenistan's efforts to diversify its gas export. But the deadline put by the Mr. Šefčovič was a surprise announcement. What is the basis of the EU's confidence that this proposal is viable? How it expects to deal with existing obstacles? What's the more realistic approach for implementation of such project? Today, we aim to discuss these questions. To do so, I have John Roberts, who is a security and energy specialist and former editor at Platts Journal and currently in Turkmenistan. He was presenting a paper, I believe, John, correct me if I'm wrong, in International Gas Conference yesterday in Avaza in Turkmenistan. John, welcome from Turkmenistan. You are the first guest publicly participating in our show.
I'm delighted. Thank you. It's good to be here.
Thank you. Steve Levine is with us from Washington, D.C. Needless to say, he is one of the prominent experts when it comes to energy politics in former Soviet Union. He is author of Oil and Glory and several other books and correspondent for Quartz. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Mohammed.
Thank you. Paolo Cerbello, Central Asia and EU energy researcher, and Bruce Panier, who is editor of Central Asia blog, Kishlak Awazi, at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, are also joining me. Paolo and Bruce, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I am Mohammed Tahir, director of Turkmen Service at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. So first, let's go to Turkmenistan. John, you just gave a paper on the same subject in an international conference in Avaza. Please tell us, what is news from there? Was the Trans-Caspian project was on the agenda?
Only in a little way. The big emphasis on in Turkmenistan is on how they can harness gas for domestic industry, with the product of that industry being exported abroad. So they're looking at things like gas to liquids, in particular gas to gasoline. They're looking at fertilizers. They're looking at chemical plants. That's their big emphasis, and they've got one big gas to liquids project that they hope will start construction by the end of this year. After that, they are still looking at pipeline projects, but it's very hard to work out how much this is a matter of, as it were, diplomatic and governmental approval for the idea, and how much it's a practical matter of the kind that can be developed by companies.
Right. Colleagues, please feel free to ask questions from each other. It's always pleasant to have interaction. And John, again, coming back to you, talking about the EU's 2019 deadline, what is the thinking among Turkmen leadership about this idea? Are they on the same page with EU?
The Turkmen official position is quite simply that anybody can build a pipeline to the borders of Turkmenistan, and as soon as that pipeline is ready for use, they will supply gas for it. And in a sense, they are accurate in this because they are producing, they have the capability of producing almost as much gas as anybody would need, so long as you have a little bit of notice. So
right. Steve,
go on. Gas, it's transportation that is the problem.
Right. Steve, I know you are one of the skeptics of the Trans-Caspian project. How do you read what John has been saying from Turkmenistan and what the EU's energy chief was saying?
Well, thanks, Mohammed. First on the expectations or the statements of the European energy minister, I think we've heard this again and again over the years, really over two decades from Europe and also from the United States, which are expansive hopes and forecasts regarding the export of Turkmen natural gas to Europe, building a pipeline across the Caspian Sea. But Turkmenistan has never itself had the confidence to sign a deal, to sign a real deal with one of the companies, with a group of the companies to build that line. And even though Berdy Muhammadov has gone around recently in Europe and also at home stating that now Turkmenistan is ready, he's also done that before. So I don't, it's the real, test will be whether he's willing to risk Putin's wrath. Really, it's Russia that scares Turkmenistan, and it's hard to understand how, if Berdy Muhammadov would not do this 10 years ago, why now he would, while Putin is on the warpath in Ukraine. As regards what John said, I find that very interesting. I don't know whether John and I'd be interested to hear more about that. If the idea is that instead of export of natural gas, that Turkmenistan takes the next step, adds value by producing chemicals, and whatever, gas to liquids, that's a very expensive proposition, but get gas to chemicals and then export the chemicals, I think that is an idea that might not run into the same geopolitical problems.
That's interesting point, Steve. I mean, going back to John, I mean, Steve said that Berdy Muhammadov was not ready to sign the contract because of the Putin factor. Is he ready now to sign such a contract if EU is interested to go ahead with the Trans-Caspian project?
I think the problem that the Turkmens face is they do not know what kind of protection they would get from the European Union or from anybody else if they were to go ahead with this kind of project. But it has to be admitted, they do not talk about this aspect at all. I haven't heard a senior Turkmen official talking publicly about the role of Russia, ever. No. And only privately, some years ago. That they are concerned, I think, is obvious. You have to be concerned. Whether they are sufficiently concerned that they would stop doing such a project because of Russian objections, that's more difficult to judge. But it's one small indication that they are at least prepared to consider it. When Russia opposes the project, publicly, what it consistently says is this project is dangerous for environmental reasons. And the Turkmens respond always by saying any line that would be built to the highest environmental specifications. There's another aspect, which is that while the Russians say you cannot build a line because all five Caspian countries have to agree if any line is to be built across the sea, the Turkmens, together with the Azerbaijanis and the Kazakhs, have a very simple attitude that if any two countries want to build a line between each other, they're perfectly entitled to do so. So to that extent, the Turkmens have at least stood their ground and said they have a right to build this kind of line.
Right. Bruce, your thoughts both on John and Steve's opinion?
Well, of course, you know, Russia has always been the big factor in trying to figure out what's going to happen with this. We know that they're going to oppose it. They're likely to file some kind of motion in an international court to hold up the pipeline project on the basis that there is no approved legal status for the Caspian Sea. And I agree with John that, I've heard these arguments before. The Turkmen and Azerbaijanis have gotten together at meetings and together with Turkish officials and now with the EU too. And they seem to have set their strategy, and it was just what John said, that, in fact, they're going to make the point that The only two countries involved in this project, it only passes through their territorial waters, and as long as they're in agreement, there's no problem with running the Caspian pipeline out there, and those guarantee up and down, of course, that the pipeline is going to be safe and it won't contaminate the environment. Iran is probably going to object to this. We don't know what the future of Iran's ability to export its own gas and oil is going to be. They might soften their stance somewhat if they're allowed to re-enter the world market. But for now, they seem to be siding with the Russians, and Russian-Iranian relations are very good right now. So you could expect that at least as the situation stands now, if the Russians are going to object, the Iranians will probably object. Now, I've made the point in one paper, too, that ultimately the Caspian being an inland sea, the naval power in the Caspian is Russia. And if they feel that there is no solid legal basis for the Turkmen and Azerbaijanis to actually build this pipeline, I can easily see where they would use their navy to stall any construction of the pipeline between the two countries.
Mr. Serbello, general opinion about such possibility that Turkmen gas being exported to Europe by 2019 seems very much unlikely, at least among our speakers. First, your opinion on this possibility. Second, what is EU's thinking behind the deadline?
So first of all, I'm in general agreement when it comes to the unlikelihood of the project, simply because of the volume of natural gas that Turkmenistan could realistically provide for export market. The first speaker, John Robert, talked about the possibility of Turkmenistan of turning any request into a supply contract, but we see now that they produce 100, 110, 120 BCM a year, and from that will actually go all to exports if all of the projects that they have in mind are built. I'm talking, of course, about the possibility of Trans-Caspian pipeline, but also the TAPI pipeline. Yeah. Turkmenistan, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iran, India pipeline. Right now, the Pakistani Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif is in Turkmenistan, and there's a lot of talk about reviving that project as well. And so these many projects coming online together seem very unlikely. On the other hand, as you asked, the EU has always been a frequent visitor of Ashgabat, trying to sign a deal on the Trans-Caspian pipeline. Now, I think actually the latest visit is more interesting because the Iran option was both mentioned and can now seem a possibility to bypass the Trans-Caspian conundrum and go via Iran and then Azerbaijan and the Southern Gas Corridor. Southern Gas Corridor that has to also be in place for supplies from Turkmenistan to Europe to take place. So it's all about right now. One of the lessons that I've learned studying energy is that until the pipeline is inaugurated and until it actually reaches full capacity, you shouldn't be too excited about it. We also remember the inauguration of South Stream at the end of 2012, and we know where that project went. So.
Right. John, I understand that both
can
EU...
I add something
sure,
on that?
Sure.
I think the situation is slightly different. Technically, they could actually put gas into the Southern Gas Corridor. The Southern Gas Corridor is, by 2019, the Southern Gas Corridor is being designed to carry, eventually, something like 30 BCM of gas. But initially, it's only going to be carrying about 16. Hmm. Now, if, it's a very big if, but if the Turkmens were to sign export contracts, then there would be time to put the extra compression and build the extra looping on the pipeline for it to start in 2019 or 2020, not at the original 16 BCM capacity, but at something somewhat larger. This would confine Turkmen exports to around a level of 10 BCM. But that's exactly the stranded capacity of gas that they have available in the Caspian area anyway. And to get the gas from one side of the Caspian to the other is technically not difficult. Politically, yes, you mentioned the question of Russia, but technically it's not. So when Sefcovic says they could do it by 2019, they could at least get the gas to Turkey by then and by Europe a year later when the Southern Gas Corridor opens. As to one point about whether the lines will be built, there's a difference between South Stream and the corridor. South Stream had a big inauguration ceremony and nothing happened. Right, the Southern Gas Corridor has signed and is currently implementing more than $10 billion worth of contracts. They've ordered the physical steel pipe. They are laying the steel pipes in parts of Azerbaijan. They are preparing to lay the steel pipe, which has been ordered and starting delivery in Turkey. And the final section, the TAP section, they are physically buying the land for the pipeline. So in that sense, the Southern Gas Corridor is far more advanced than South Stream ever was, with practical work in hand. That's why the problems, I think, are commercial. Will the Turkmens sign a commercial deal? And political, can they get the kind of security guarantees that they would likely require? Technically, they could actually deliver by 2019.
Right. I understand, John, about EU and Turkmenistan wants to diversify their energy import and exports. It has been the case for over a decade now. What has changed that both EU and Turkmenistan again talking about this? The existing problems are there, even more complicated, as Steve said. How does Turkmen officials explain this?
I explain it by thinking that it is possible that the Turkmens are coming to the conclusion that any project to develop gas sales to Pakistan and India directly by the TAPI pipeline may have to be delayed. The reason being, of course, the security situation in Afghanistan. Is anybody right now prepared to build a pipeline across Afghanistan? One of the problems this project has had is that they have never been able to find what is called a commercial champion, a company ready to lead the project and put its own money in. And that's connected with lots of factors, including the fact that most companies approached about this project, including the big American companies, Chevron and ExxonMobil, and Francis Total as well, have all wanted to have some big role upstream in the field development as well as in developing the pipeline. The argument is very simple. If we are not making profits on the upstream production of gas, we are not going to risk the many billions it's going to cost us to build a long pipeline. So if the Pakistan-India pipeline is on hold or moves on hold, then the Trans-Caspian pipeline would be a very good alternative at a time when Turkmenistan is increasingly dependent on only one market, which is China, because it looks as if very steadily sales to Russia will decline.
Right. Colleagues, I just remind you that please feel free to ask questions from each other if there is any question. Otherwise, I'm coming back to you, Steve. I know you are a skeptic about this Trans-Caspian pipeline. Then how you read preparations for such a project? You know the construction of Turkmenistan's east-west pipeline to be completed this year, which will carry Turkmen gas from its eastern fields to the Caspian Sea. Once a gas arrives there, we know there is no other use of that except it is directed to Europe. Then construction of Turkey's TANAP pipeline to be completed by 2018, which will carry both Turkmen and Azerbaijani gas to Europe. If the construction of Trans-Caspian pipeline is a dream, then what all this was about?
Mohammed, this is a great mystery. It's been a mystery for a while. Why is Turkmenistan building that line? But I think it's important to step back and look at the drivers here. Why is this conversation taking place? Is it simply the academic interest of journalists and scholars who look at the region, you know, being infected by pipeline politics, or are there real economic and political drivers that could make this happen? And John raised a point which is the main point for Turkmenistan, and that's that it behooves Turkmenistan. One lesson of the post-Soviet period is that it's unwise, imprudent to rely on one market, on a single market, and it is overly reliant on China. So Turkmenistan does have a strong driver to make, to have a diversified, network. And of course, Europe has a big motivation to obtain better supplies. So what are the options? You know, it seems to me all of us have said the same thing, and that's that Russia is the big unknown in the equation. It seems that Turkmenistan needs to figure out how to make Russia make it a beneficial and ultimately profitable situation for Russia for that gas to go forward. I think it would be it's a very hard problem, especially again in the current political situation. But I don't think it's impossible.
Yeah, that's my question. Is then how EU and Turkmenistan both will deal with this existing obstacles, as you said. Obviously, Russia is one of them. You know, I believe this is the worst time and worst case to approach to Russia for a compromise, because on one hand you are in collision course with Russia, on the other hand you are basically wanting to say Moscow that let Turkmenistan send some of its gas to EU. We want to replace it with your gas. Do you expect Mr. Putin to say yes to such approach? Bruce, do you want to say something?
See, I'll let Steve answer this, and I want to come back to a point that Steve made.
Yeah, please go, Steve.
All I can say is that somehow the Chinese got Putin to agree to let them take a lot of the gas. I don't know all of them, and I don't know what went on in the negotiating room, but one of the factors was that the Chinese let Russian construction companies build a lot of the pipeline, so there was a profit motive.
Right. Bruce?
No, you know, I just wanted to pick up on that point about the Chinese market a little bit, too, is that you know, having said how skeptical I am of the Trans-Caspian pipeline, I do understand urgent need for Turkmenistan to find another route at this moment. Sure. You know, it was just 6-7 years ago that Turkmenistan was exporting more than 40 BCM a year to Russia. Yeah. That's down to 4 this year. But you know, in the meantime, it's not even only a question of and I'm talking about the next couple of years. It's not only the question of most of the gas and nearly all of it going to China. It's a question of the gas that is going to China is paying back Chinese loans. So in effect, the Turkmen government is getting nothing. They're not bringing in any revenue or very, very little revenue from the gas that they're shipping to China until they pay off the many, many billions of dollars of loans that the Chinese have extended them. So they really need to open up another route and quickly, because they're with all that gas, you know, the fourth largest reserves in the world. But in the meantime, they're really not making hardly any money off this at the moment.
Opinions are different on this subject. And when I'm saying this subject, we are talking about this Trans-Caspian pipeline. So let's imagine, best case scenario, Turkmen gas will be delivered to Europe ultimately one day. So we have been all along talking about 30 billion cubic meters of Turkmen gas heading to Europe annually if the project is implemented. But EU needs lots of gas. and Turkmenistan has lots of them. If such pipeline is realized, can Turkmenistan expand its export to EU? Mr. Serbulo, in your recent article in Diplomat, you were arguing, again, the same thing that you have just did, that Turkmenistan does not have enough gas to deliver its promises.
I don't see the possibilities of in such short notice to basically double production. And I agree with John that the TAPI is on hold, the pipeline through Pakistan, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and India, but it's talked about now, whereas 2, 3, 4 years ago, it wasn't. Now we have a multiplication of official statements about TAPI, which weren't the case. To find the same amount of declarations on the TAPI, we have to go back to the mid-90s. And that means that there is a favorable political situation and a willingness of the countries involved to build it. On the other hand, the main question is, how is it possible for Turkmenistan to ship gas, 30 BCM of natural gas, to Europe, when the capacity to transport it, as we were mentioning before, is not there through Turkey, and is not there in Europe either way.
Sure, John, jump in.
I think we are making a terrible mistake in focusing on the 30 BCM. The Turkmens have spoken in the past of wanting to export a big volume of gas, and they've used the figures 30 BCM, and the European Union has used the figure 30 or 40 BCM. But in fact, I think what they're actually talking about now is just exporting 10 BCM, or that amount, from the Caspian region alone. That is where there is the Malaysian company Petronas, which has invested $8 billion in developing a gas field for which there is relatively little market. That gas is described publicly by the Petronas people as stranded gas. It's gas that has no real place. They could increase production very, very quickly indeed to meet any opening that they were able to access. There is a question, of course, that in the long run, the Turkmens and Europe would like to make this bigger. But I think when you hear people like Mr. Sefcovic talking about doing something early by 2019, they're not talking of 30 BCM. They're talking of something much more limited and realistic, like 10 BCM. I'm not sure of this. I'm not absolutely sure of this in the sense that I haven't been specifically and publicly told this by either Turkmen or European officials, but it certainly fits with everything that they seem to be, as it were, saying sotto voce.
Steve, whether it is 10 BCM or 30 BCM, but you say it is not possible unless Russia is made happy. So what is the scenario that Turkmen gas finally can reach to Europe? How you can make Russia happy?
Yeah. Well, there's one other route, which was mentioned earlier today, and that's Iran. I'm not so sure that Iran, even though it wants to maintain a good relationship with Putin and with Russia, that it wouldn't find a way to accommodate Turkmen gas. I think the obstacle there is that Iran has so much of its own gas, and does it want to accommodate arguably a competing supply? But you know, negotiators can be very clever. You know, you're sitting down with someone, you're getting along, and suddenly you have a deal. If I were to make a guess over what if there's going to be export of Turkmen gas, what is the likeliest route that could actually work? I would put my money on Iran.
So, Bruce, when do you see Turkmen gas heating your kitchen here in Europe?
Well, you know, one I agree. The Iranian variable here is probably the most important thing to keep an eye on, because while the EU is expressing a great desire to hurry up with this Trans-Caspian pipeline, I think that if the negotiations between Iran and the world powers over Iran's nuclear program keep showing progress, that the EU's desire or passion for building this Trans-Caspian pipeline will not exactly wane, but they'll be willing to put that on hold a little bit and see if the Iranian situation does develop positively enough that they can get the pipeline through, because logistically, in terms of cost, it's just a much easier route to do. So it seems that was my problem when Shevchovich said that he wanted it by, you know, Caspian Pipeline 2019, was I was thinking, well, you know, by 2019, the sanctions might be off Iran, and you're going to build this expensive project that's already got objections from Russia, when you could just wait, you know, another couple years and build it along a much easier route at a much less expensive or much less expense. You know, and I agree with Steve too. I think as long as Iran can't, I made that point that as long as Iran can't enter the market itself for gas and oil, of course it's resistant to seeing, you know, huge volumes of gas pass across, because it would like to supply those markets itself. Freed from the sanctions that are on it right now, you might get a very different attitude out of Tehran, and also remembering that, as far as I understand, most of Iran's big gas fields are in the south. We got South Pars, for instance. You know, I mean, they're better served to supply stuff to countries like India, the subcontinent, and further in Asia. I'm not sure I've heard that their pipeline connections going from south to north are not so good. So, again, it would work in Turkmenistan's favor that they would let the line go through the north.
Can I add something?
Mm-hmm. Sure, John, please.
First of all, Shevchovich has specifically mentioned Iran as a possible route.
Yeah.
So that is under consideration, and obviously under consideration in, as it were, a post-sanctions environment.
Yeah.
The point, though, is on cost, if we're talking of 10 BCM, then a Trans-Caspian pipeline wins hands down. It's a very limited cost. You've only got to get the gas to Azerbaijan, which is either 300 kilometers from coast to coast, or if it's just from the Turkmen gas fields direct to Azerbaijan, less than 150 kilometers. But more to the point, if you're going to build a 30 BCM system, then Iran does have an advantage, because you can start plugging into Turkey, you can start using existing rights of way, whereas the cost of doing another pipeline right the way across Azerbaijan, Georgia, and into Turkey, to, in effect, to parallel the southern gas corridor, would cost a lot more money. I think Iran would be cost-effective on a big pipeline. But on an initial system, I think it's likely to be the Europeans would instinctively be wanting to see a Trans-Caspian go.
Right. So with that note, it's already 30 minutes. We are close to my promised time to end the debate. It's a long subject. We could be talking about this for hours. So we will conclude our discussion here. It's been a pleasure talking to you, John Roberts from Turkmenistan, Steve Levine from Washington, D.C., Paolo Cervello, and Bruce Panier. Thank you very much for being part of the discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.